This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The challenge of proving that a trader is out to manipulate a financial market. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. A high-frequency financial trader who allegedly helped crash the stock market for one sickening 25-minute stretch a half decade ago is set to appear before a judge in London today. 36-year-old Navinder Singh Sarau denies accusations of market manipulation in the 2010 flash crash, but is accused of what's called spoofing and doing it on a global scale. Joel Hasbrook is a professor of business and finance at New York University and is a financial industry consultant. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
So we see this term spoofing as it allegedly applies to the man under arrest in London. Give me a sense of how one might try to manipulate the markets by spoofing.
The closest thing that is probably familiar to your listeners would be the practice of shilling in an auction, like on an eBay auction. If somebody, like a buyer, puts in a low bid, the shiller would put in a little bit of a higher bid, and it would go back and forth like that. In doing this, the shiller does not want their own bid to stand as the highest bid. They really don't want to buy the thing. They just want to drive the price up for other people.
Now, this case out of London, apparently experts are surprised that authorities are going to try to prove market manipulation. That's apparently tough to do and a fairly rare strategy.
They're always difficult cases to make because, as with the Dodd-Frank law, it's going to turn on intent, putting out a bid or offer that you don't intend to execute. And in any legal situation, intent is difficult to establish.
Joel Hasbrook is a professor of business administration and a professor of finance at the Stern School at New York University. Professor, thank you for this.
It's been a pleasure, David.
It's emerged that when the Chicago Mercantile Exchange inquired about some of Sarau's trades, Sarau emailed his broker saying he'd called Chicago back and told him to kiss his derriere, only he didn't say it in French. The stock market started out mixed this morning. The 10-year Treasury yield was up at 1.93% early today, even though the consensus is there's no way the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates in June. The chief global strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds, David Kelly, told me this morning he still thinks there's a maybe 20% chance that rates will go higher in June amid improvements in the jobs market. And he argues if rates do go up, it could oddly spark a stimulus.
I mean, after all, it's going to be a big wage increase for all those people who've got money sitting in savings accounts. They're finally going to get some interest. If long-term rates go up, it might make the banks a little bit more willing to lend to people on mortgages. And I think it will help confidence. So I don't think raising rates is going to slow the economy down at all.
That's a fascinating point, by the way, about home equity loans. Higher interest rates might incentivize some of the banks to get some more money out there?
The problem is that these banks issue 30-year mortgages, and they finance that with short-term money. But if they think that in the long run, short-term interest rates are going to be higher, they're not so anxious to lend to people at 3.75%. But if that number was 4.5% or 5%, they might actually be a bit more willing to lend. So I think higher long-term interest rates actually might encourage the banks to lend a bit more.
Economist David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds. Also this morning, word that McDonald's sales were down 11% last quarter amid food scandals in Asia and fierce competition in the home market. But the new CEO there is promising a turnaround plan, and the stock is up 3% now. Search giant Google could launch its new wireless service as early as today. The Wall Street Journal reports a key feature is customers paying only for the data they use instead of buying data in bulk, whether they use it or not. Marketplace's Annie Baxter reports on what industry experts are anticipating for this service.
Google's ability to offer its own service plans will hinge on deals with Sprint and T-Mobile, which will rent out their excess network capacity. Rob Frieden is a telecommunications professor at Penn State University. He says Google's plans are expected to differ from the big carriers by allowing customers to pay for data usage a la carte instead of in a big buffet-style package.
There are certain instances where you want certainty in the bill, so you know what it's going to be. But there are other instances where you want to economize and pay as you go.
Google's test run will likely be small, but could trigger bigger changes in the telecom industry. Here's Ben Schachter, an internet analyst at Macquarie Securities.
I think why it's important to us is that you will likely see other third parties, including potentially Amazon, do similar type models where they actually do try to get a larger install base and really take on the incumbent pricing model.
For now, though, Schachter says Google's plan will likely be too small to compete aggressively with the big carriers. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
California Appeals Court has ruled that one city's special system of charging for water, the more you use, the higher the price, is invalid. Pricing water is tough, even in places not beset by drought. Marketplace's Adam Allington reports.
The law of supply and demand would tell us that the California drought is causing a classic low supply, high demand scenario, which normally leads to higher prices. But there are lots of costs in delivering a seemingly endless supply of drinking water.
You might not have water scarcity problem, but you might have water quality problem.
Nusha Ajami is director of urban water policy at Stanford. She says the cost of infrastructure is rarely fully accounted for in water rates.
There are a lot of other municipalities that do not necessarily have the capacity or manpower or the expertise to set up the rates properly, or they just basically don't do it.
Peter Glick is president of the Pacific Institute.
The proper pricing of water is frankly a global issue. We argue about it in the West and in California in the context of drought, but it's a national issue as well. We ought to pay the full price for the water services that we get.
Glick says raising rates to reflect the true cost of water is the best way to develop better infrastructure and encourage people to use less. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Finally, a nice one in the New Yorker magazine this week, a cartoon of a formal wine tasting, people eyeballing and sniffing the contents of their wine glasses. One guy says, "I'm getting subtle hints of what the Fed might do." In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.